A whistleblower has turned Washington upside down and has changed American politics in just the span of a few days. How's the press stepping up for this moment, and what might happen next? Welcome to this week's Reliable Sources podcast. I'm Brian Stelter, and we use this weekly podcast to go in depth with media leaders and newsmakers, talking about how the news gets made and how all of us can help shape it and make it better. And this has been an extraordinary week of news. We are recording this on Friday, September 27th. You know, just a couple of weeks ago on television, I said the Democrats are losing the impeachment messaging wars, that President Trump is winning, that the Democrats don't seem to have a strategy or a plan. But then this whistleblower story erupted. And every day this week, we've been bombarded by news. It's like drinking from a fire hose. And I have the perfect person with me to try to process it, try to make sense of it, and make sense of how this news environment affects something like an impeachment inquiry. Jeff Greenfield is with me. He's the award-winning political analyst. He's endured two rounds of presidential impeachment proceedings in the past as a television journalist, working for almost all the major networks, including CNN, for many years. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me.
Okay, always a pleasure to be with you, Brian. You are a calm voice amidst the tsunamis of media output. The signal-to-noise ratio is relatively high with you.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you. I don't always feel very calm, but I'm glad to hear it. I have this sense that maybe viewers and readers' heads are spinning right now. at the end of this week, you know, there was this impression that the Democrats were far from impeaching Trump, that Nancy Pelosi was reluctant to go forward. And that was just like 4 days ago. How do you make sense of this week?
Well, look, shocking as this is to people who believe that, you know, that we are in a media created matrix universe, real events often have an impact. The whole Watergate story really began when one of the Watergate burglars read a letter in open court saying, you know, there are other people involved in this. And Judge Sirica then said, we got to start finding out who beside these original burglars may have been involved. So in this case, what you had in the midst of a whole bunch of different approaches to what's impeachable, there really was collusion. It's his taxes. It's the payoff to the mistresses. It's the lies about how he got rich, whatever. It's him and Putin. Suddenly you had a very clear, understandable assertion by someone whose credibility was vetted by one of Donald Trump's own appointees, namely the director of national intelligence, who said the president pressured the president of another country, to help him politically at the risk of perhaps risking desperately needed military aid. That's a simple, understandable assertion that goes to the heart of what a president's supposed to do and not do. And because it involved an urgent matter of foreign policy, it rattled a lot of the Republicans. You know, we didn't have a lockstep defense of the president, because if the assertion is true, he was playing with the future of Ukraine, threatened by Russian militarists, saying, I may not give you this money unless you help me politically. And so I think the clarity of what was asserted and the nature of what was asserted was a big reason why things changed pretty quickly. Mm.
What did it feel like to you as someone who's seen it all, so to speak? What did this week feel like to you?
Well, in one sense, because of the last 3 years, I had the reaction of, oh, yeah, why not? You know, at this point, Ryan, if an alien spacecraft landed and the people getting out of the spacecraft said, for the sake of the survival of the planet, you really need to change presidents, I'm not sure I'd be that surprised. I've said it a couple of times in talks that I feel like somebody who's been a commercial airline pilot all his life. And today, as I'm about to take off, the control tower said, by the way, you should know the law of gravity has been suspended. You know, the this is not normal thing is so much a part of what we've all been living through, that in one sense, this may not be surprising. I mean, look, we've certainly had stories from inside the administration of discontent and concern and bafflement at how the president behaves. It's just that this one appears to have shaken people inside the administration in a way that even things like how he dealt with President Putin didn't. It was different qualitatively, I think, as I said, because of the jaw-dropping nature of what the president did on this phone call and for what reason.
It does seem to have shaken people inside the White House. If this whistleblower is to be believed, there were multiple officials who were sharing information with him about what happened. And yet those others have not gone public. They don't appear to have filed their own whistleblower complaints. I kind of look at this and I see some timidity or there's probably a stronger word than that, you know, about White House aides who are not willing to stand up and say something is going wrong here. It kind of is extraordinary. This is the first time we've had a whistleblower complaint about President Trump.
Right. And remember, you know, you're, I think, often one of those people wisely cautioning against a rush to judgment. Right. So we're talking about something that's, what, 3 days old? So it may be that this is the sort of story that evolves over time, mm-hmm. and that it all doesn't happen in one sudden rush. You have had, I think it's fair to say, less unanimity among Republicans in Congress, in the media, than in the past. You have had not just Mitt Romney, but a couple of other senators and a couple of Congress people in the House saying, this bothers me. I'm worried about this. You've had a kind of civil war going on at Fox News that's intensified over this. So I just don't think we can draw a conclusion as to how this evolves based on the last 72 hours.
That is an interesting point. You are saying the response from Republicans is actually more muted than maybe would be expected, that there isn't as much of a staunch defense of Trump as might be expected. Because there have been some defenders. There certainly have been figures on Fox that are defending him no matter what. But you're saying we should notice the relative lack of support, that there's not stronger support among the Republicans.
Yeah, this is in no way a prediction. I just noted that there were more people on the Republican side of things going, this is bothersome. You know, yesterday at the hearing with the DNI, one of the Republican congressmen on his way to sort of trying to say kind things about the president said, you know, this phone call was not okay. You've had Toomey, you've had Sasse, you've had a couple of others shaking their heads. And, you know, we're at the beginning of this stage of the process. There's so many things we don't know about, you know, how do the Democrats in the House intend to do this? Are they really going to funnel everything to the House Judiciary Committee, which is one of the most polarized committees in Congress, mm-hmm. as opposed to, for instance, the idea of a select committee, which is what a generation or two ago the Democrats in the Senate did, forming a seven-person committee composed of kind of centrists, non-ideologues. Do we have a media, this is your department, do we have a media universe that would permit a kind of slow unfolding of facts? Or are we, as you used a much used analogy, are we just going to spend the next couple of months drinking out of the fire hose? It's all unclear. And all I'm saying is this feels different because there are people on the Republican side of things who seem genuinely bothered by what the president did on substantive grounds. Once again, traditional Republican approach to foreign policy is we want a muscular foreign policy. We want the United States to defend allies against threats. And here is Ukraine threatened by Russia. And the president seems to have put military aid on hold and waiting to see whether or not Ukraine would cooperate with his political desires. That is at the root. That's about as basic a question about presidential behavior as you can get.
Is there any alternative to drinking from the fire hose? Do you see any way to avoid that or to have an alternative as we go through this impeachment process?
Well, I'm sort of doing a piece for Politico about the concept of alternate universes. So there might be an alternate universe where we would proceed slowly and dispassionately. But it occurred to me, I made this point maybe before with you even, that, you know, if you go back to Watergate, right, once Walter Cronkite and Company signed off at 7:30 on the East Coast back then. The next news you got was when the morning paper hit your door. You could watch PBS's replay of the Watergate hearings. But basically, that was it. We did not immediately switch to 5 hours of frenetic analysis or opinion making. We did not have a bombardment of social media and tweets. And so the whole process of unfolding the story, of finding out what happened, was at a much more deliberative pace. Look, again, this is your turf more than mine, but you tell me whether you think the modern media universe would permit that kind of stately process.
The idea that the news turns off is something that's just not imaginable anymore, unless people go out of their way to turn it off, right? It only stops if you force it to stop.
But that's an individual decision. I mean, back then, no matter how hungry you were for news, you know, Walter Cronkite said, that's the way it is. And that was it. So in that universe and in the political universe, or how many people in the Congress spend more of their time trying to figure out how to get on their favorite cable news network than doing the business of, say, legislating or honest to God investigating? Look, and I mean this, by the way, in a bipartisan way. How many Democrats have already called not for an inquiry, but for impeachment? I think half the Democrats of the 850 Democrats running for president have said, we got to impeach this guy. Now, they're not saying we better get to the root of it, like some do. I think Biden has that position. But others are saying, let's impeach him. On the other side, you think about that House Judiciary Committee with Republicans on it, like Louis Gohmert and Jim Jordan, and Matthew Gaetz and Doug Collins. Do we think they're going to say, let's see whether the president really may have overstepped the line here? Hmm. Is that anybody thinks that's the process we're going to be going through? I don't.
Well, so far, how does this compare in your mind to the Clinton years or the Nixon years? How does it feel?
Let's talk about the Clinton years because I was in the midst of actually covering that story. And what I think we saw was a more, slightly more civilized way of people going to their respective corners. Hmm. I once said that CNN we didn't need to book any guests. We should just have sock puppets because everybody was saying the same thing. He lied under oath. Yeah, but it was about a private matter. But no man is above the law, but you're trying to overturn an election. But it's important to remember that back then, even though the ultimate votes were highly partisan, there were 5 Democrats that voted to impeach in the House, and they were all like Southern Democrats, and I think most of them ceased to become Democrats. And I think there were somewhere, depending on the count, 5 or a dozen Republicans who voted against impeachment. So the votes were partisan, but the process was less poisonous. Mm. The process was more, because we were a less polarized country, because the identification of party as almost tribal religions was less ingrained. And so what you had was, and also the issue, if you think about it, whatever you think about the President Clinton and his behavior, you know, debating whether or not a president is going to be removed from office because he lied about being sexually pleasured by an intern, isn't quite the same thing as, is this president subordinating American foreign policy to Russia or to his own political fortunes? It's a much more serious kind of process than I think it was even 20 years ago.
Mm. And do you think that Watergate comparisons, trying to go back in time to the other impeachment that people know about, is it even possible? I mean, is it a waste of time to try to compare what's going on now to the 70s or the 90s, given how much has changed in our media and politics?
It's not a waste of time, provided that what you realize is just how totally different things were in the Watergate era. I mean, yeah. I've written about this before, and I have others, but consider that both houses of Congress were heavily dominated by Democrats. The Senate Watergate Committee was a model of non-ideological combat. You know, the chair was a conservative Democrat, Sam Ervin, who was a constitutional expert, The highest ranking Republican was Howard Baker, a moderate Republican. There was Lowell Weicker, a liberal Republican. Herman Talmadge, a conservative Democrat. So the process of trying to find out what happened was much more honored back then. And also, you also had a media that was much more homogeneous. There was no Fox News. There was no Breitbart. And the media, to be sure, was more than anxious or more than happy to explore the potential wrongdoings of Richard Nixon. He was not a media favorite. So there was no counterweight. There was no nightly onslaught on the equivalent of Fox News saying, you know, this is an attempt to overturn the election. Democrats did the same thing back when they had power. So the difference in the political and media universe between then and now was incredibly stark. I don't know if there had been the equivalent of a Fox News, and if Republicans had had the Senate, it's possible that Nixon might have survived this, even though a lot of the Republicans back then hated Nixon. So I think what you learn in looking at the Watergate situation is just how inappropriate or inapposite or how you can't fit the Watergate model into today.
You really can't.
You know, CNN has Bernstein and
John
Dean on. Yeah. And whatever, they may have a lot to say about this, but to try to analogize to Watergate, it seems to me to be wrongheaded.
You know, there's something incredible about the diversity of media now versus 20 or 40 years ago. But there's also something I find so sad, knowing that we're going to be locked into these two alternative universes, and that the facts will appear so different in those two universes. That there's a sadness that comes from knowing that this is going to cause even more division and hate.
Yeah, the only in one of the alternate universes, somehow or other. I mean, I think this is beyond possibility now. You know, you wonder if Speaker Pelosi decided to form a small select committee rather than having six different committees send all their information to judiciary. Would the Republican leadership in the House cooperate? I mean, you know, one of the things that's happened, the midterms in 2018, a lot of the more moderate Republicans were defeated. So what's left is a Republican caucus that is even more ideologically homogenous than it was. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard for me to imagine that the Republican caucus would permit its leadership to say, "Yeah, let's try to come to the heart of this. Let's try to really find out what happened, and appoint a select committee with the least partisan members of each party together." I think that's a fantasy. I just don't see how that happens. You also have on the Democratic side the Progressive Caucus that basically has already said, "Well, let's impeach the guy," and will regard any attempt to kind of put the brakes on as a sellout.
So as a result, there is no way to have a process that will not be politically polarized and painful. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I'll give you one other alternate universe.
Yeah, love it.
A whole bunch of people who served in the Trump administration, McMaster, Mattis, Tillerson, I'm not sure, I don't know, maybe Bolton, but a bunch of them, you know, say it's time for us to level and tell you that this president has to be removed, that he's a danger to the American Republic. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's deranged, whatever it is. If you could imagine such an event where at that point the Republican leadership in the House and Senate says, okay, you know, this is now a matter of beyond even politics. Let's send a whole bunch of, remember how, in, you know, the story, how in Watergate in the last days, a bunch of Republican senators went up to the White House and told Nixon he had to leave. So I suppose under those circumstances, you could imagine, I don't know, Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Geraldo Rivera and Lou Dobbs and Rudy Giuliani saying, "I'm sorry, Mr. President, you have to go." But I do think that's in the realm of fantasy also.
Let's take a quick break here on the Reliable Sources podcast. Get back to reality in a moment here with Jeff Greenfield. More in a moment. And we're back on the Reliable Sources podcast. talking about a momentous week in the news business, a week that saw the beginning of a formal impeachment inquiry in the House and damning revelations from a whistleblower alleging, in some cases, possible criminal behavior by the president and his aides. We're taping this on Friday, September 27th, and I'm talking with Jeff Greenfield, the renowned political analyst. We've been talking about Fox and the effect of right-wing media, among other things, and that's something that has been notable this week, Jeff, to see anchors like Shep Smith and commentators like Judge Andrew Napolitano on Fox talk about the possible crimes that have been identified here. And then on the other hand, pretty much the rest of the Fox lineup, stars like Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity, mocking the Shep Smiths of the world, swearing there aren't any crimes. You know, you have these alternate universes right within one channel when it comes to Fox.
Yeah, now, Shep Smith and Chris Wallace, among others, have for some time been very different from the primetime advocates.
Yes.
They've been, and I think in this case, we've just seen it play out more because we had a almost a kind of verbal sparring match between Smith and Andrew Napolitano, who said the president's committed a crime, and Laura Ingraham and Joseph DeGenova on the other, who said, no, they're all crazy. The one that I think I've been keeping an eye on for a while is Drudge, because Drudge was for quite a while a very reliable transmission belt for pro-Trump stories. He began a while ago posting stuff on his front page, questioning how strong the economy was. And in the last few days, the front page has been filled with stories that are critical of Trump, that raise questions about whether, in fact, he was behaving in an unpresidential way. And I don't know whether that's simply a case of him wanting to get out in front on impeachment, which is what made his reputation during the Clinton era.
Right.
Or whether it's a sign that what Trump has been doing has rattled somebody who was more inclined to support him. And that's, look, in some way, Brian, this is an old story. From the days of the campaign itself, when Trump first ran, the question was the center of the Republican Party prepared to reject him as a hostile element, or was he going to conquer it and bend them to his will? And that's been the case from the time he started running. He has remade the Republican Party. He has violated many of their most cherished beliefs about free trade and the deficit and foreign policy. And they've gone along in part because he has won over the base of the Republican Party. And so the question is, again, it's kind of like what we talked about earlier, whether the comments of Senator Romney and Senator Sasse and others are just one-offs, or whether they suggest that something slowly may be changing, that the kind of reflexive circle the wagons, remember, this is our guy, may not fully survive this latest story. We don't know this. I mean, obviously, we don't know how this plays out. But I just found that I found the Drudge response to this worthy of a look, at least.
And it gets to your broader point about Republicans and how they are responding, or in some cases just not reacting, not commenting. There's been this wide range of responses, with some pro-Trump kind of social media stars and celebrities on Fox swearing that the president is the hero and has done nothing wrong, and finding ways to bend over backwards to support him. But yes, you're right. There has been, in other parts of the Republican Party and in the right-wing media, a much more muted response. Maybe such an old-fashioned thing. Maybe they're actually waiting for more facts. What an old-fashioned idea.
Or at least waiting for the public opinion polls. One of the questions is whether or not the public, which seems to have been until recently skeptical, if not hostile, about impeachment, is going to change its mind. There are some numbers, but you know how, I mean, this is a basic belief of mine, that polls have long become the crack cocaine of journalists, and it's probably a good idea not to breathlessly wait for every new number. But I have a feeling that some of these Republicans have got their fingers in the wind, seeing whether or not there's some kind of sea change coming about how the public regards Trump and impeachment. And look, this president has uniquely been pretty much in the same place in the polls as he has been from the beginning. It's been comparatively little change.
Incredible.
And we just don't know whether this event is going to be different. So, you know, as the president likes to say, Brian, let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens. Is it fair to say that no matter what happens, this will be a trauma, a national trauma? You know, you're seeing Democrats like Joe Biden say this is a tragedy. Nancy Pelosi saying, I take no joy in this. You know, and then you get some liberal commentators saying, oh, come on, this is a great thing. You know, this is not a tragedy at all. Where do you come down on that?
Well, I remember back in Watergate, I think Michael Kinsley, the very wise observer, said the same thing. He said, are you kidding? Of course I'm enjoying this. I've hated Nixon all my life and he's in trouble and I'm delighted, which has the advantage of at least candor. You know, one of the possibilities, and I think it may be one of the possibilities that would help Trump, is if the country at large, the middle, not the partisans, come to see this as just chapter 50 of another example of endless noise coming out of Washington, nothing getting done. Just a mud fight between two equally dislikable sources. And so that's one possibility, depending on how this plays out. The possibility of, again, the middle of the country getting an education in just what it is about this story that's so disturbing, that's another possibility. But as we've talked about, given the frenetic nature of how media are delivered and absorbed, I just don't know how that happens. I know people will try. You know, it's not that the news media won't make an effort to spell this out. The New York Times today had the entire whistleblower complaint. But my question to you, but I mean, then in the inside, we're the whole thing. But how many people do we think will say, you know, I think I'll take the next hour or so and read through this and see what this is. I just don't know. I don't know to what extent people have already chosen up sides, to the extent that as they watch this play out, it'll be like watching, you know, the Major League playoffs, depending on whether you're for, you know, Houston or the Dodgers or the Yankees or whatever, and that everything gets fed through the frame of, is this good for my guy or bad for my guy?
Right. I'm watching the Eagles-Packers game yesterday, and I'm watching as an Eagles fan, and nobody watching an NFL game, nobody watching a baseball match, no one's going to change sides mid-game. Nobody.
There is no Eagle fan who thinks pass interference was correctly called against their defensive secondary, period. It doesn't matter how many replays. It doesn't matter if the guy had a knife. That's what fans are. That's why fan is short for fanatic. What it means. And I think that's what spilled over heavily. I mean, it probably always was there. But certainly, you know, I think politics is viewed today that way. It's you know, if the player's wearing my team's uniform, I'm for him. If he's not, he's an evil guy. And I don't see where this changes. If anything, I think this accelerates it, because now we're talking about whether or not a president's going to be impeached. There's one other quick thing I think we should note that impeachment, I'm thinking about this, back in the Nixon day, was a very portentous thing. I mean, the people who voted for it, I think genuinely felt, my God, what is this? You know, we're really going to do this. By the time it got to Clinton, it was much more, it had much less impact. You know, Clinton was impeached, he was acquitted, and he wound up with higher job approval ratings at the end and at the beginning. So there's that. The whole idea of this as kind of a solemn moment in constitutional history, I think, is going to be replaced by who's up, who's down, who's winning, who's losing.
Well, this is going to be a challenge for the country, for politicians, for journalists. Do you have any final thoughts or advice for the reporters, for the commentators, for the folks who are watching this every day?
Take a breath. Seriously. Take a breath. You know, I think that applies, if it's even possible, to the political players. One of the things that, you know, this came on the heels of that New York Times book excerpt that suggested that there was another complaining witness against Brett Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
And before it clarified to say, by the way, this person doesn't remember it, and I think there were four candidates for the presidential nomination in the Democratic Party who called for Kavanaugh's impeachment. I would hope that the people running for president and the people making judgments and the people making the news would take a breath. That's not always allowable. Got to get that Twitter feed out. Got to match the story. But the sheer speed of this is not, of this whole media world, is not conducive to say, wait a minute, let's take a breath and see if we can actually figure out what happened here. And there are many journalists who will do this, but whether they will be overwhelmed by the rush to judgments, one can only hope.
Right. Whether that high quality news and information and that well thought through, well processed information gets drowned out by the fire hose is a question. Jeff Greenfield, thank you so much. I'll look for your next column on Politico.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. Bye-bye.
We've been talking with Jeff Greenfield, the political analyst. You can find him on Twitter at Greenfield64 on Twitter. And as I mentioned, he has a column coming up on Politico.com. Thanks for joining us on this week's Reliable Sources podcast. We will see you on TV this Sunday and every Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on CNN. Thanks for tuning in.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country. Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.